Welcome, everybody, to the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach Doug Gefeller, back live in our studio today here.
It's a pleasure to be here on octalkradio.net live for another exciting episode of the Coaching Perspective Radio Show. And our guest for today is Kimberly Rausch, author, coach, and, most important, a returning guest. In fact, Kimberly was, her show last year was the number one downloaded show for the year. So, Kimberly, it's a pleasure to have you back here with us.
Well, thank you. The pleasure's all mine. I'm glad to be here.
Well, and she's going to be talking to us today about personal brand management. But before we get started on that, let me just go through the mechanics here. I'm your host, Doug Gefeller. I've been a Master Certified Coach by the International Coach Federation since 1999. Ooh, that's long. And I've been coaching owners and business owners and senior executives and their teams for 20 years here in Southern California, all under the banner of the Coaching Perspective. So if you'd like to know more about my coaching services, just go to my website, thecoachingperspective.com, or you can reach me the old-fashioned way, 714-726-8354. Well, let's get to the show here. Kimberly, it is great to have you back, and I'm excited to hear your topic. When we were talking about this before the show, Kimberly was very insistent that this is not brand management. This is personal brand management.
Yeah, you know, I think everybody has a personal brand, whether you know it or not, or whether you're paying attention to it or not. And, you know, I find that when executives start to pay attention to it, there's a lot of power to that. There's a lot of, you know, they become more influential and they're better able to manage how they're being perceived.
Great. Well, before we get to that, in case some of our audience is new, and I know we always have new people, give us a little background. What did you do before what you're doing now?
Before what I'm doing now. And people can't even picture this of me anymore.
No, it is hard for me to picture.
Right. I spent 22 years in public accounting, 14 years on the audit side, and 8 years on the IT security and controls side. My last position was at KPMG. I was a national partner in charge of having the IT auditors and the financial statement auditors play nice together.
A coaching opportunity if I ever heard of one.
That's when I got an executive coach. And really, you know, long story short, what he really helped me see over time was that the part of my job I loved was all about coaching and developing and motivating and challenging and inspiring people. And so in 2007, I took the great big leap to take that big old partner hat trophy off my head and step out and start my own business. And now I get to do what I love to do 100% of the time.
That's a big jump. You know, I've made that transition myself a number of years back from that corporate security blanket into, what am I going to do today? Will anybody call?
Right, right.
It's a little scary, isn't it?
Very scary. Very scary. But fun. You know, I knew it was something that I wanted to do. It was something I'd been planning for over a year. And ironically, I had a client a couple years later who had been a CFO a couple times and decided to go off and do something different and started a business. And he kept saying, well, if it doesn't work out, I'm only out this. And if it doesn't work out, you know, I'll still be able to do this. And I said, I don't want to hear any more about if it doesn't work out. You know, I want to hear about when it does work out. You know, let's dream about that. And he just looked at me and said, oh, come on, Kimberly, you came out of public accounting. You had to have had a contingency plan. And I never felt so naked in my life. It was like, the thought of failure had never crossed my mind. And I think that's part of why I was successful.
You know, I would agree with you 100%. My personal philosophy for why so many small businesses are successful, or why the successful ones got there, is because most of the people starting a small business can't afford to fail. It's like, I have no security blanket. I have no backup money. Yeah. I have no job waiting in the wings. I will make this work.
Yeah.
And it's like they don't know better, that what they're doing isn't possible, and so they achieve it.
Right. Exactly. I also find that when people are considering another option, if they're running away from something,
yeah,
they're more inclined to fail than if they're running towards something. that, you know, is really inspiring to them and just, you know, it's their dream.
Always
and it's very, very powerful to be running towards something you're envisioning.
Which kind of ties in with what you're doing now. So tell us, share with the audience what you do now.
Sure. So I coach business leaders for professional excellence, fun and fulfillment in work and in life. So I kind of consider that the triple play of success.
The trifecta, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think everybody focuses so much on being professionally excellent. And the most of the people that I coach, C-level, VP-level executives, they're great in their field. They know the technical aspects of their job, but some of them have kind of lost that fun or they've lost the meaning behind what they're doing, and they start to feel stuck. And the professional excellence, you have a lot of people who, these are all leaders, but did you follow leaders that just were technically competent, or were the leaders you really wanted to follow the ones that were having some fun and you know, you could see the meaning in their jobs and why they were doing it? And those are the leaders I find to be the most successful. So I coach leaders one-on-one. I also work with their teams, oftentimes with executive teams. And I'm also a keynote speaker and facilitator. So I oftentimes will do retreats or keynotes or fun things like that.
Okay. And tell us about your boot camp. That's, I think, one of the more exciting things that you do.
Yeah, so kind of as a give back to the community and really as a way to get to know people, quite frankly. As I was starting my business in 2007, it was kind of a downtime.
Great time.
Yeah, there were a lot of executives who were in transition, and I was out networking, you know, doing what you do to start building a business and networking away. And I was meeting these really phenomenal people who just happened to be in transition. And there was so much they could be doing to help one another, but they didn't know that. They kind of thought, you know, everybody kind of thinks if you don't have, you know, a person with a job opening, you know, that you can refer this person to, that you can't really help them. And that's crazy. I mean, there's so many ways that you could help them. It could be just listening to their stories or listening to their brand or understanding, you know, what they might be looking for and maybe giving them some networking groups to go to. Or it might be, you know, recommending a, you know, a vet because their dog is, you know, ill and taking up time and, you know, detracting them from their job search, whatever it is. You know, there's just a million ways to be helping people, helping them interview, whatever. And so when we found that they were helping one another, they were empowering each other. So we every month we have a group of 14 people that come together. And we help them with their personal brand. That's one of the things that we do. But we help them get there by understanding where they have thrived. You know, I don't want these people to sell themselves at their mediocrity. I want them to sell themselves based upon the best of who they are when they're thriving. We help them understand what's getting in their way. You know, what's the garbage they're telling themselves? You know, oh, I'm, you know, I've already hit the peak of my career. It's all downhill from here. You know, I'm going to live under a bridge. You know, I'm not sure my marriage will survive. You know,
sure.
I can't change industry. I'm too
real
old.
Real fears.
Right, right. Well,
real fears in the sense they're very fearful of it.
Right, right. They're real in their head.
Yeah.
There's not always a lot of truth behind most of it, quite frankly. And sometimes just helping them flip that around into a different perspective can be really, really empowering. And then as we spoke on my last, you know, the last time I was here, we have them do an exercise called Who Are You When You Are Big? And it's been a the foundation that allowed me to write a book of that name earlier last year.
Great book. If you haven't read it yet, you people in the audience, Kimberly was nice enough to give me a copy, and I've been through it a number of times, and there's bits and pieces of it that I reference out constantly. Very good book.
Certainly. Yeah. Certainly fun.
Yeah.
So we've had over 1,000 executives go through this program now, which is just, you know, kind of mind-boggling. We didn't ever expect that this little free program we offer to try and help play it forward, if you will, would have gotten that much traction and that much of an audience, if you will, and a network, quite frankly, so, which has been great. They've all, you know, they all land, they all get back into positions, and now they have a little idea about the power of coaching.
Well, You know, and what one of the things I love about what you do, Kimberly, is when you and I talk sort of confidentially about how things are going, your metrics are not how many new clients you got. Your metrics are not how much money you billed this month. Your metrics are always about the people you helped. And that's, I think that's just who you are. And it's wonderful. And I want to applaud you for that.
Yeah, and I think the other things follow that, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, when you love what you do and when... Well, I get to I refer to it as getting to witness their magnificence emerge.
Wow, I like that.
And you know, sometimes I think that sounds corny to people who don't really get it, but that's what I get to do every day is just watch people's magnificence emerge. It's already in them. It's just like taking off a piece of Saran wrap and letting them grow. It's fun.
Well, you know, question. Last time you were here, I asked you our standard question we ask everybody about what your guiding principle is. And as I was getting ready for this interview, I almost thought, well, I've already asked you that. I won't ask you again. But, you know, we had a situation last week on the show where the guests had been told ahead of time that I would be asking them that question.
Mm-hmm.
And when I asked them the question on the air, we had this very long pause. And they both looked at me, you know, like the cow looking at the gate.
Right.
And then they gave me the answer. And afterwards, I said, well, what happened here? And they said, you know, once we got in the studio, we changed our mind about what the answer was.
Wow.
We got more thoughtful about it. So I decided, well, I'm going to ask you again. I don't know whether it's going to be the same answer or a different answer. So what's your guiding principle?
Well, you did tell me that I was going to be asked that question.
Yeah, I tell
and
everybody.
I thought it would be boring if I just said the same thing. So I played a little bit with personal brand management, which is, you know, kind of the topic of the show.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I started my business, I'll kind of tell it through story.
I love it.
When I started my business, I needed to establish a brand. And I knew pretty well that I was going to use All-Star Executive Coaching. And All-Star comes from a song by Smash Mouth, which you've probably heard. It's, hey now, you're an All-Star, get your game on, go play.
I have. Yep.
And that, you know, I have a belief in life about working hard and playing hard and, you know, really loving what you're doing. And I think that ties into my branding around coaching business leaders for professional excellence, fun and fulfillment, and you know, just operating from your most empowered state. You're an all-star. Get your game on and let's go play, right? You know, I mean, when people are in that place, it's you know, it's
yeah.
special.
Yeah.
It's special.
In the flow, as some people would say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But as I was trying to, you know, really get my business going, coaching is very personal. So I could have this great company name and sort of philosophy, but what I really needed to do was brand myself and brand myself as a coach. And I did the same thing that most people do when they, you know, brand themselves and they talk about what they've done. Oh, I'm a former partner in public accounting and I have 22 years business experience and, you know, and now I'm a coach. And that's not what gets clients. You know, and so I realized, gosh, I need to be intentional about my brand and who do I want to be? Do I just want to be what I've done or do I want to be what I stand for? And I started thinking way more intentionally about that. And luckily, kind of funny, I one of my very first clients, actually a practice client during my certification,
okay,
was a VP of marketing, or a chief marketing officer, actually. And as I was helping her prep some interview questions, she would normally be interviewing with CEOs who maybe probably didn't know everything about marketing. And I noticed that her answers to the questions I was sort of playing with her were all about kind of marketing 101.
Hmm.
And I was like, oh, wow, what if you take that and apply it to your personal brand? So if you think of marketing 101, what are the things that you learn? You learn, you know, defining your brand. You learn about brand perception. You learn about understanding and identifying your target audience. Communicating your brand in a clear, concise manner. Brand strategy, brand management, brand damage, brand legacy, you know, all kind of terms that if you think about it, we all get and understand those terms, but we've never probably stopped and applied those terms to ourselves, right? And I realized that if I didn't deliberately and intentionally manage my brand. It would be managed for me. And right. I was losing a, by not being intentional about my brand, I was kind of leaving it to chance. And I kind of thought, that's not what I should be doing.
So the guiding principle there is?
Is this really being deliberate and intentional about who you are in the world and how you want to show up and what you stand for.
I love it.
And not just leaving it to what somebody perceives you to be based upon, you know, actions and things that they see, when you may not always be intentional about managing your brand either, right? So you've mm-hmm. got sort of a definition, but if that's not how I'm showing up every day, then that's not what people are going to perceive okay. about me.
I like it. That is a different answer.
Yeah.
And I like that answer. It doesn't say you're a different person. It's just a different way of saying, I think, what you shared with us last time.
Yeah, I think what it really is everybody's personal brand has to be unique and authentic to them. And it's tapping into what's authentic for you. You know, like, what do you stand for? Like, don't give the answer that you think somebody else wants to hear, or try to be somebody else, or try to act like somebody else. I mean, when I was a partner in public accounting, I always wanted to be seen as a partner in public accounting. Well, guess what? That was not my brand, you know?
Yeah.
That was what my ego wanted my brand to be. But behind the scenes, your brand is something completely different, right?
And I would imagine that this whole topic really ties in with the work that you do in your boot camp, where you have people in transition, where they're either having to find their brand for the first time or they're changing their brand.
Right, definitely. You know, so many people in transition, you ask them who they are, what their brand is, and it's, oh, I'm a CFO of a public company and, you know, I work in X industry, or I'm a CFO of a public company and I've saved a company $10 million. Well, that sounds remarkably similar to the next CFO, you know? And that doesn't at all say who they are as a leader or what they stand for. It's what they've done. I want to know who they are, not just what they've done.
You know, that's not an easy question to answer, is it?
No.
I don't find it easy.
No. Well, actually, in America, we're drive, 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 action, 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 go, go, go. And we're not very accustomed to sitting back and reflecting. And as a coach, you know, I mean, that's the number one thing we get our clients to do, is sit back and reflect and be intentional. And there's some really easy ways, I think, to determine your brand. If you take the time to reflect and take the time to pay attention.
Okay, so when you do that, what are some of the, you know, key things here that they should be thinking about? What are the premises behind this brand management?
Yeah.
Personal brand management, excuse me.
So, yeah, and really before we get into sort of defining the brand,
yeah.
You know, I'll talk a little bit about what I think brand management really is, right? So we judge ourselves based upon our intentions, but other people judge us based upon our actions.
Right.
And so brand management is kind of keeping the two in sync. For instance, when I was in public accounting, I always viewed myself as a passionate, hardworking, loyal, dedicated, the go-to person, the person that would take on the challenge that nobody else wanted to do, and I'd do it, you know, with a smile and be excited that I was getting great experience. Someone that worked hard and played hard. That's how I viewed myself. And if I really had to be honest...
Here it comes.
Yeah.
We're waiting.
If I really had to be honest, you know, there were probably a lot of people that saw me as stressed out, overwhelmed, and frustrated.
I think we just did a DISC report on you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, we have these things called brand attractors, right? Which is our stress behaviors that show up. And, you know, maybe they only show up 10% of the time. So maybe we're in accordance with our intended brand 90% of the time. But then 10% of the time our stress behaviors show up. And guess what? That's what people remember, right?
Right.
It's not what you're what you intend it to be at all times. And so, you know, I talk to people and I'm like, are you Tigger or are you Eeyore? Right? Do you give energy or do you take energy? You know, have you been around those people that, you know, boy, they just wear you down all the time, you know? And I mean, no, that's not their intended brand.
No, it right? isn't. You're right.
Are they calm under pressure or, you know, do they create more stress when it gets under pressure for other people? Do they squash every idea or are they open to listening to new things? You know, it's just how you're showing up every day.
But we show up in lots of different ways. I mean, nobody's 100% consistent. I mean, I'd like to think I was. I probably really... most authentic when I first wake up in the morning, and then real life sorts starts to hit me.
Right.
And there's probably times when I get off track of being really coming across as to who I want to be.
Exactly. We all can get off brand, right?
Okay.
All of us can have stress behavior show up. But when you're more aware of how you want to be, even under stress...
Okay.
Because you have an intention as to because you've defined your brand, you've defined how you want to be seen, then all of a sudden under stress, maybe you don't, you know, take that person's head off, or maybe you don't order people around, or whatever it is that you might do under stress, or raise your voice, or appear panicked or overwhelmed, or, you know, maybe you take that 5 minutes to calm down before you walk into the conference room, or whatever it is, right? Just being way more intentional. And stress behaviors are, you know, a really good time to pay attention, because that's a time when we often get off brand.
So let me ask, and forgive me if I'm jumping ahead here to what you want to cover, just rein me in. But when you're talking personal brand management, you're not talking what name should I pick for my company, you're not talking what business card, you're talking who I am and how I come across.
Exactly. And how other people perceive you.
And how other people perceive me.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is a whole different twist on, you know, if I walked past the door and it said conversation on personal brand management, I'm thinking all of these other PR kinds of brand management. And that's not what you're dealing with here whatsoever.
There's kind of a correlation, though, right?
Okay.
You know, you can pay someone to help you manage your brand, right? Like you would pay an ad agency, or like Pepsi pays an ad agency or whatever, right?
Right.
But they're very intentional about what that brand is, and then they stay very, very true to that brand, and they're managing very closely to that brand. So, you know, I never intended to show up stressed out, overwhelmed, and frustrated, you know?
Right.
But unfortunately, that's what people saw when I was under stress. You know, I always thought they saw that I was hardworking, loyal, dedicated, the go-to person, the person that would take on the hard challenge. And you know, quite frankly, gee, of course a person like that would have some stress, and that should be okay.
Okay.
You know? But, you know, you want to really define who you are. And how you want to be.
And how do you go about doing that?
Well, let me tell you a story about a person I worked with that I think will help you see how you can be different with your brand. So
okay.
I had just started working with her, and she was super busy. She actually was out of public accounting herself, and she was a corporate controller in a public company, and she was an officer of the company, and she was a very dedicated and loyal person, and absolutely believed. She operated from a belief that, you know, she was a very integral part of this leadership team, and that her opinion mattered, and that she should keep people out of trouble or keep the company out of trouble, and you know, be the guiding person. And she valued that she'd be the one in the room to, you know, talk about the elephant, or you know, or see the risk and make sure that people were aware of it and whatnot. And then she viewed that as part of her role. And so we had a little bit of a conversation around brand management, and I remember it was on a Monday that we had this coaching session, and a week later I had another coaching session with her, and she said, you know, before we get started, I just have to tell you, I've been crying all week, And I said, well, hi, you know, what happened? And and she said, well, I've been having conversations with my husband about this, and I've she was just kind of devastated. And I said, well, what, you know? And she said, I'm the mean girl.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
She never intended to be the mean girl. But she realized she was the one that was always speaking up on and being the naysayer or and she was just trying to express risk and making sure that people were aware of it, or, you know, and she truly had the best interest of the company at heart. Absolutely, positively, right? And so you asked about, okay, so how do you go about sort of managing that? So the first thing she did was, when she got in those situations again, you know, in conference meetings or, you know, executive meetings or whatever, she would just not say what she was going to say in a public setting, you know? And she would, so she, we first, you know, awareness is huge. I mean, I said, good for you. You know what I mean? Here she was saying, she'd cried all week, and I'm saying, good for you. Because she had had a breakthrough in awareness.
Yeah.
A huge breakthrough in awareness. Wait. She never intended to be the mean girl. And so awareness is 50% of the battle, right?
Yeah, you can't fix or change what you're not aware of.
Right. So once she was aware of it, it was pretty easy for her to stop perpetuating that brand. But then we had to work on, okay, giving her some skills over time to be able to show up differently, to be able to pose the question in a different way, to be able to, you know, yes and, as opposed to no but, right? You know, when people say no but, you know, and they just come across as sounding negative or squashing your ideas. And if you can say what you love about that and let's also consider the risk, you know, it just comes across completely different. So we gave her lots of tools to manage her brand so that she was never perceived as the mean girl again.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, look, I want to talk more about that, but our producer's waving at me. We're going to take a commercial break here, and then we will be right back.
Perfect.
Thanks. And we're back, and we're talking today with Kimberly Rausch, and we're talking about personal brand management, which is not what you might think it is from that term, but it's a lot about being authentic and showing up the way you think you show up when you don't always show up that way. So we're down to the point where we're talking about some detractors. You want to explain what that is, Kimberly, and sort of take it away from there?
Yeah, so stress behaviors detract from your brand, right?
They detract from everything.
Exactly, right? So those are brand detractors, if you will. And so I really encourage everybody to ask that question, you know, okay, define what you think your brand is, what you intend it to be, and then stop and say, okay, if I really had to be honest, people probably saw me as what, you know, and lay that out. And then now you know what you need to manage, right? And I challenge everybody, whether they're a corporate leader or a stay-at-home mom, to stop and ask the question, because I think that's the first thing. That's the piece that creates the awareness, right? And so you can play with detractors, but then you also want to say, okay, well, we know what we don't want to be.
Yeah.
But how do we even further define and get intentional about who we do want to be? Right, that intentional piece. And when you first ask that first question, it's okay, what almost historically have I intended my brand to be?
Right.
You know, without really having thought about it. but then now we can take it even a step further and say, okay, well, gosh, if I did think about it, how would I want to be perceived and how would I want to have shown up, right?
And do you find people, is it fairly typical that there's a big difference between the two?
Yeah, you know, I don't, unless you consciously, you know, deliberately, intentionally think about your brand and manage to your brand, you've left that up to chance, right? And you, not everybody, most people are not, their actions don't always match their intentions, right?
Absolutely.
As much as we'd like to think they do, you know, they don't always. And then being honest about that and saying, okay, where don't they? And then managing that piece of it.
You know, it's kind of interesting. It's sort of, somebody referred to it, one of my clients actually this morning referred to it as their green Volkswagen theory. You've never seen a green Volkswagen till I mention it, and now all you see is green Volkswagens.
Right.
It was sort of like I had not thought about this till you and I had talked and we were getting ready for the show. And it just so happened I picked up another book that I'm reading, and it was talking about, you know, who are you? Which is pretty much what you're talking about. And it had a couple of statements, and I want to just throw them out and get you to kind of react to it. It says, you're not your circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
You're not what you do.
Mm-hmm.
You're not your role.
Right.
You're not your beliefs. And by the time I got done with that, it was like, okay, now what am I?
Exactly.
What am I?
Exactly.
And it referenced a title that said, who are you? And so I thought, well, I'm going to Google this and see what it comes up with. Well, it was hard getting past the Who music group, because that's 90% of what Google gave me back.
Did you get back past all the social media on my book?
Oh,
who are you when you're big?
That's way too obvious. That's why I'm asking you, so we can get it right from the author here.
Exactly.
So where do you go from there? Trying to define what my brand is, who I am.
Yeah. So in the boot camp, we have people do an exercise. And we call it kind of thriving moments, or proudest moments, if you will. And we want people, you know, in the first week, we have them tell a story to one another. We pair them up in groups of two. And we say, okay, I want you to think of a time in your career when you were on your game, when you were energized, engaged, when you were, you know, you couldn't wait to get out of bed and go to work in the morning. And, you know, you were doing something that you really, really enjoyed. It was fun. You were looking forward to it. And tell your partner that story.
Okay.
And then the other person kind of plays it back. Okay, what was the situation? What was the action? What was the result? And here's what sounded like it was so meaningful to you. You know, I work with people in transition, and we try and prepare them for, you know, having stories for interviews. And everybody always goes from their greatest sounding accomplishment, right? The thing that they think somebody else will, you know, be most impressed by. And outplacement services tell them to come up with, you know, SARS and PARS, situation, action, result, or problem, action, result. They're kind of short stories, you know, quick, short interview answers, basically.
Okay.
The trouble is if you start out of your head, you know, with what you think somebody else wants to hear, it might have been a really frustrating time in your career. It might have been a really frustrating project or a project you hated. And that energy is going to come through when you tell that story. Whereas, if you start from a time when you were thriving, when you were energized and engaged and having fun, you know, we bring the participants back together and we say, how did your partner show up, you know? And we usually go until we hear their eyes were sparkling.
Yeah.
When you're talking about your greatest sounding accomplishment, your eyes might not sparkle, but when you're talking about a time when you thrived, they will for sure. And so that piece of why was it so meaningful, I think, is what gets left out most of the time. You know, and that meaning tells so much about your values and who you are, what's important to you, what makes you thrive. So that's an example of one story that we have them sort of do in the boot camp, and then we send them away with an activity during recess, because we don't like to call it homework.
Sure. Whatever makes you happy. It still sounds like homework.
To come up with, you know, 5 or 7 of these stories, and maybe they're not all work-related. You know, ideally, they're not all work-related. But 5 or 7 times when they were thriving in their lives, and take it down to 3 to 5 bullet points, you know, situation, action, result, and why it was so meaningful, and be able to tell those stories, kind of the executive summary version of those stories, you know, almost one sentence on each of those things, so that you could say the story in a minute or so. Because I guarantee that once you get them talking, their biggest risk is that they're going to overtalk because they're excited, right? And they could lose somebody.
Yeah.
So they need to be able to tell the short version, and then they will have no trouble answering additional questions about it, right? When they have tapped into what was so meaningful in each of those stories, it really tells them a lot about who they are. And then, like, some people even put them on index cards and kind of lay them out in front of them. And if you then step back from those stories and say, okay, what's common about me when I'm thriving?
Okay.
You know, if there were three headlines about me when I'm thriving, what would they be? Or if there were five words, or if there was a metaphor, or if there was, you know, something juicy, what would it be? You know? And usually people can come up with something really powerful that differentiates them. They're not just the public company CFO that, you know, works in X industry anymore. They're, you know, the Eagle Scout of CFOs. And, you know, I had a client who that's almost how we branded him. As we sat and went through stories, he'd been an Eagle Scout. And I could just hear that was so greatly ingrained in his character. You know, there's kind of 5 or 10 words that describe an Eagle Scout. And, you know, the first thing is that he was prepared and you know, loyal. I don't know all the words off the top of my
honest.
Trustworthy. Right. So when you think about financial statements and financial records, you want all that in there. So that was kind of the first thing. You know, he was going to have the books done. They were going to be clean. They were going to be right. They were going to be on time. That was a piece of his brand. Okay. Mm-hmm. Which you want all CFOs to, you know,
sure.
sort of be good with that. The next piece is if you think of a Boy Scout or an Eagle Scout, they like adventures, right? And this guy wanted to work on the transaction that was going to change the face of the company. He wanted to be, you know, really involved in the merger or in the new product launch or in the, you know, the thing that was going to really change. And that was, you know, exciting to him. That was when he was on his game. That's when he was, you know, the best of him was showing up. And then thirdly, if you looked at how he managed his team and how he led his team or interacted with the others, the loyal and kind and caring and all of those words out of an Eagle Scout showed up. And it was like we were able to sort of, you know, brand him as the Eagle Scout of CFOs and be able to talk about those specific things that were so, you know, ingrained in his character and in his values and who he was and how he operated day to day. And that will be the right CFO for one company, and it might not be the right CFO for another company, but that's okay, because we want to get him into the right job.
But it's who he is.
It was so who he was, yeah.
So one of the things that I'm hearing here is in your boot camp, obviously a valuable takeaway is the stories and the mm-hmm. ability to tell these stories quickly. But it sounds like for what we're talking about here today, the real takeaway is an understanding of who you are, of what makes you, as you put it, what makes your eyes sparkle.
Yeah.
What gets you excited.
Exactly. Your authentic brand of leadership, if you
brand.
Will. And that's important for the boot camp as well, because as those people are interviewing, and quite frankly, they're selling themselves, right? That's marketing, you know, 101. They got to be true to their brand in that interview. And it also helps them understand whether that company's the right place for them. You know, does their brand fit there?
See, what you're talking here is really, in some ways, the opposite of our popular culture for sales today, which says that if you're interviewing me, I need to find out what it is you're looking for, so then I can mirror that back to you, which may not be who my authentic self is.
Right.
What I'm hearing you say is I need to first let you know who I am, which may or may not fit what you're looking for, but let's get it out on the table right away.
Yeah, it's kind of a give and take. I mean, if that person knows who they are when they're walking in, then they can ask the questions of the company about, you know, that would be the questions as to whether they would be a fit there, right?
Right.
So I still want them to find out about the company and find out about their needs, but they're coming from a place of power in knowing who they are and making the call as to whether they're the right fit, as opposed to being at the mercy of the company, as opposed to, first of all, bending themselves to what they think the company wants that may not be them, and then being at the mercy of whether the company accepts them or rejects them, right?
Yeah.
This way, you walk in knowing who you are, and you're seeing mutually together if it's the right fit, which I think gives the executive a lot more power.
And this is in no way limited to the environment of finding a new job.
Exactly.
I mean, this is the same thing you want, I would assume, in looking for a new client. I want clients that are going to appreciate and want my authentic brand, who
right.
I am. I want a partner who appreciates that authentic brand.
and, right,
and on and on and on.
Right. Employees, even, you know, if you're a, you know, a C-level executive and you're, you know, looking to hire people, that you want to make sure they're going to be aligned to the things that you believe and the culture that you create in your company. And so knowing who you are helps you figure out where everything all fits together and where you can attract people that align to that.
Is there a generational piece to this? I mean, have you found, is it easier or more likely for the younger generation to be authentic, bold about who they are, but more difficult for the more seasoned workers? Or have you not noticed that?
No, I have noticed that, actually. You know, I think that, I don't know about you, I came out of college at a time where it was kind of tough to get a job. I was very fortunate to have a job in public accounting, but a lot of my peers didn't. And so you really were in a place where I think a lot of people bent to fit the job. Mm-hmm. You know, they tried to fit, even if maybe it wasn't the right fit. And that translated over time into not necessarily being authentic to yourself. And I think that, that a lot of people have carried that along with them. And even over time, maybe it's even gotten more ingrained as to showing up how you think you're supposed to show up, as opposed to how you really want to show up and what would be true to yourself. And I think that's oftentimes where I end up coming in as a coach, is when somebody's just gotten really untrue to their values, to something that's really important to them. They may not be able to put their finger on it or identify what it is until we sit down and really talk about it. But something's unaligned.
Yeah.
Yet with the younger generation, it's kind of interesting because I think, and you know, it's that, you know, they live for now a lot more, and so they're more attuned to, where do I thrive and what do I want to do and what do I really like, as opposed to, oh, I'm supposed to go, you know, to college and I'm supposed to get a 4-year degree and I'm supposed to get into this kind of profession, or I'm supposed to be a doctor because that's what my parents think I should be, or a lawyer, or a, you know. They're way more free-spirited, and I think that's actually serving them very well.
Yeah, many of those things, which we, in many cases, have knocked them for.
Right.
They want instant gratification. They only want to do the things they like. They want to do it in their way, are exactly the things you're saying. Hey, if that's who you are, let's identify it and go find the fit that's going to let you do it.
Right. You exactly. Know? Exactly.
Okay. Well, I'm taking you off track here, and we're going to be running out of time shortly. What else do you want to get across on this brand management?
So I think the key is that when you take the chance, the opportunity to identify your brand, you know, then you want to take every chance you have to reinforce that brand, you know, the brand that you've defined yourself to be. So in every leadership decision, in every, you know, stressful situation, in every celebration, in every interaction with your executive team or your employees, with your family, with your community, it's way easier to show up to something you've defined and you know, comes from that really authentic place when you're aware of it. So just keeping it in mind and always playing to that. You want to be the very best of who you are all the time, not just when it's when it's easy, but even when it's hard. And then that's, you know, you think about brand consistency, right? Stress behaviors throw, you know, you're not being consistent there. But when you're consistent in your brand, whether it's a high or a low or a, you know, a stressful situation or a celebratory situation, then people start to, okay, that's, they know that, okay, that's what that person represents.
Well, and I think one of the key things you're pointing to, you pointed to a number of times today, is that the people that we are dealing with, it's very easy for them to spot when we're not consistent with our brand.
Mm-hmm.
We're the ones that have trouble identifying when we're not consistent.
Absolutely.
Because as you've said, I always think I'm this wonderful person.
Exactly.
But we around you, we see immediately when you're off track. So the more you become aware of this, develop the ability, the muscle, the tool to recognize that, the more you're going to be in sync with everybody else.
Right. Right.
Okay. I'm getting that. That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
And when you're really in tune with that, quite frankly, the easier decisions become, right? It's a lot easier to be true to that brand and make decisions in accordance with that brand when you've defined it. And honestly, it even seems to prevent some of the stress that might come along later.
Oh, sure. It would. Definitely right. Would. Yeah.
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 Yeah. That otherwise would have been there had you not been being intentional. This also applies to teams. You know, teams have a brand as well, right?
Would you say culture is another way of saying brand?
Yeah, I tend to think of culture as being more organization-wide.
Right.
As opposed to, you know, the finance team or the marketing team or the executive team or, you know,
okay.
Right? So oftentimes I'll get called in and do a retreat around who are we when we are big, right?
Yes.
And really getting the team aligned on how they want to be perceived by the rest of the organization. And maybe, you know, getting truthful about how they've been perceived to date and how they want to be perceived. And then, okay, what are we going to do to create that?
I think in sports, we see that sports teams very definitely have a brand.
Definitely.
And then, I mean, we know that team.
They are
dirty players. They cheat. We're not even going to go there. And they do that all the time. But, yeah, it's much more obvious in a sports environment what the brand is.
Right.
And if you can't be authentic with that brand, you're not going to fit in that team.
Right. And then you have to do brand, you know, damage control, right?
Oh, boy.
You know, and I've seen executives do damage control. You know, if you're aware of your brand and you slip and a stress behavior shows up, you know, if you own that and acknowledge that and take responsibility for that impact, then all of a sudden you're still true to your brand.
Okay.
Right? So it doesn't mean you have to be perfect 100% of the time. But, you know, when you recover to that, you know, if you get off track, recover to that and make sure people see that and know that.
Well, you know, this has been so fascinating. The time is getting away from us real quick. So I just want to give you a few minutes here to sort of wrap up anything I've sort of misled you on. What final words do you want to make sure our audience walks away with here?
I think it's just to, you know, be deliberate and intentional about defining your brand and then managing your brand. You know, make sure your actions match your intentions or that you recovered those, you know, intentions if you get off track and that people see that. Play with really understanding what people perceive about you and being truthful about that. And, you know, if you define who you are when you're big or, you know, what you really want the best of your brand to be, it's much easier to live aligned to that.
Okay. Is there a particular book you could recommend that I should read that would help me in identifying this? Come on. Spit it out there, Kimberly.
Sure.
What is it?
Sure. So, Who Are You When You Are Big is the book I wrote last year. And big isn't about ego or title or money, which is how I had been defining my brand in public accounting before I left and all of a sudden felt small when I went through identity theft and didn't have it anymore, right? And it's about being in that resourceful state, you know, your most resourceful state of mind. And so if you can define who are you when you are at the best of who you are, you can step into it more easily, recover to it more quickly.
And how do people get a hold of you so they can learn more about this?
Sure. So my website is allstarexecutivecoaching.com. And if you're interested in getting to big, there is a Getting Too Big website, www.gettingtoobig.com. And if you're interested in joining our mailing list, you'll have access to a 60-minute Impact of Big webinar where we interviewed 4 different people related to the main concepts within Big and had them read their Who Are You in Your Big statements, and you'd get a good flavor for the book and what it's all about and join our community.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Well, Kimberly, thank you very much for joining us again and, you know, an experienced member here of the Coaching Perspective Radio community. And we love having you here and we're going to look forward to having you back again.
All right. Well, my pleasure. Thank you for having me. Okay.
Well, look, we've been listening to Kimberly Rausch, author, coach, and recurring guest here on the radio show. She's been talking about personal brand management, making sure that you are authentic and true to who you are. Next week, we will be dark. We'll be back on March 5th. Boy, the time is flying here. I will be here with some topics I want to share. I just want to also mention that on March 12th, we will also have a returning guest, Sylvia Becker-Hill, the lady with the brain, as she likes to refer to herself. And she will be back here talking about soulful organizations, what you can do to be at the forefront of the organizational evolution. And I'll give you more information on that as we get closer to that showtime. So this is Doug Gefeller saying, I hope you've enjoyed the show today, that the discussion has provided you with new ideas and information that you can put to use immediately to identify and achieve your goals and your personal brand.
You've been listening to the only show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller.